Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys.
A balance between social and commercial, or social and financial, whichever way you want to look at it, it's the crux of any good social enterprise. Every single day, all our managers, most of our staff, our board at monthly meetings, the executive, the balance they have to make all the time is the social, commercial, commercial, social, social, commercial. And it changes, you know, it changes on, you know, on what's happening all the time, you know, on the day-to-day, and what's happening with the business and what's happening sort of nationally. But that is the, you know, that's what gets you out of bed in the morning, because that is what you're trying to deliver. You're trying to deliver the commercial and the social.
I am thrilled today to introduce Di Powell, who is CEO of HCT, a London-based social enterprise in the transport industry. Di has been running HCT since 1993, and over this time, HCT has grown more than 100-fold from a small community transport provider into an award-winning national social enterprise, which now provides over 17 million passenger trips on buses in the UK every year. Di is passionate about social entrepreneurship. He's a board member of Big Society Capital in the UK, is the chair of the Disabled Persons Transport Advisory Committee, and a Social Enterprise UK board member. This is a great opportunity to speak to a committed social entrepreneur who is also a strong campaigner and advocate for social enterprise as a business model that provides social outcomes using business functions.
Can you tell me a little bit about your background, Di, and how you came to play the role that you now do in HCT?
Background's very varied. So I haven't come from a traditional background. I was born and brought up in South Wales. Left school at 15. Done various loads of very strange and interesting jobs, including being a miner and a fisherman and various things. But then somewhere in the mid 80s, I ended up in Hackney. And I suppose. Starting there. So, end up in Hackney. When you come to London and you haven't got a job to come to, what most people, a lot of ordinary people, tend to do is they go and work on the buses because it's easy to get on and it pays okay. So I became a driver for London buses. I wasn't a very good driver, so after 3 months I had to leave. And then I was not working for a couple of months, looking for something to do, and I found a very young and very small Hackney community transport, and I started there as a volunteer in the late 80s.
Excellent, excellent.
That's where it began.
Yes, yes. And what was it doing? What was the core focus? I guess at the time you joined.
It was providing. So when I joined HCT, it was, as I say, very small. There was only about four or five employees. And they were providing transport for elderly and disabled people and community organisations in Hackney. So it got a grant from the London Borough of Hackney to provide these services. And my first role as a volunteer was to transport disabled people about, you know, during the day, wherever they wanted to go.
Great, great. And to what extent did you see what the organisation was doing then as some kind of social entrepreneurship, or being different from, I don't know, a public sector related, you know, operation or a charity or something like that?
At that time, not at all. So at that time, I say we're talking mid-80s or late 80s, it was a very much a charity and a charity mindset. So I started as a volunteer driver, then I got a job washing the vehicles down, part-time job there, and then within a few years I got, you know, sort of full-time job and became the, it was called the director then, but, you know, ultimately it's the chief executive, same role. So the board restructured the organisation sort of around the 92, I think it was, and I became the chief executive. But it was around that time then that Hackney was quite a difficult borough to work in politically because it was fairly unstable. It was and therefore the financial support to HCT was very unstable. So the idea of the business model was then, well, how do we make sure that the people that need these services will get the services regardless of what happens with the grant from the council. So there was a couple of years of, I suppose, quite detailed debate at the board level and senior management level to try to turn the business the other way around. It was quite bloody as a discussion because there's quite a few people who didn't think you should ever do anything commercially, and we had to, but we actually lost some board members, and you know, we sort of had to change the board around a bit. But the idea was actually, how do we provide these services that we think are right, that the community think are right, even if the local authority is not able to support them themselves.
Right, right. Very interesting, because I guess to the heart of what a lot of social entrepreneurship is about, balancing the social and the business, I suppose, as well. And social entrepreneurship, I suppose, has been on a journey as well, and developed over time. It's now, you know, become a very well-established area, and with, you know, credibility and so forth in terms of as a model for organizations that, you know, want to generate social impact. I mean, at the time, how important was it in your mind that HCT would be a social enterprise, as it were, and how important, what do you see as the special ingredient that comes from being a social enterprise?
Well, at the time, the phrase social enterprise wasn't known. So we were just trying to trade to provide the services that we wanted to provide. So part of the income was grant, part was trading, and all we were trying to do was provide services to the community. We only became a social enterprise officially because we saw an award for the social enterprise of the year, and we looked at the criteria and thought, yeah, that's what we do. So that was in sort of late 90s or mid to late 90s. And I suppose it was then that we sort of started to look at the business model as a social enterprise rather than just a an organization that's trying to deliver something. So I think that, you know, that came a bit, you know, sort of by accident. Obviously now, you know, social enterprises are, as you say, a well-known term, and people understand, or a lot more people understand, you know, exactly what it's about. It took us a few years from the initial conception of what we're trying to do to become the organization we are today, you know, even in sort of methodology. So to be able to get the core skills that you need, the capacity that you need to be able to trade properly, and to be able to build it up to be sustainable. The balance between social and commercial, or social and financial, whichever one you want to look at it, it's the crux of any good social enterprise. So to be a good social enterprise, you've got to be a good enterprise. So you have to be able to be a good, if you're not a good enterprise, then you can't be a social enterprise. So you have to get the business right. But you're there to deliver the social good. So every single day, all our managers, most of our staff, our board and monthly meetings, the executive, the balance they have to make all the time is a social, commercial, social, commercial. And it changes, you know, on what's happening all the time, you know, on the day-to-day, and what's happening with the business and what's happening sort of nationally. But that is the, you know, that's what gets you out of bed in the morning, because that is what you're trying to deliver. You're trying to deliver the commercial and the social.
That's very interesting, and you put it very clearly that balance at the heart of what you're doing. And what does it take? What have you learned about how to do this and how to do this well?
Good Lord. I think the people that you work with, so that is your board, all your stakeholders, your staff, all the way through the organization, they have to understand that balance. And I think they have to understand that it is a balance and it'll swing both ways. And then those people, the responsibility they have, be it, as you say, at board or operational level, have to be very clear that actually why it's going to swing both ways. So why it's going to be more commercial one month and more social one month or one year or one week. And that is, you know, that is the nature of it. And I think that it's getting that understanding through people, that everyone actually is on the same wavelength on that.
Right. That's a very interesting. I suppose the like any enterprise, and that fundamentally you've got to make sure that there's enough money coming in into the business, and clearly and a surplus of profit, whatever, to continue to grow and to reinvest in and I suppose to be a sustainable social enterprise. How challenging is it to have the commercial sensibility and to develop that in order to make sure that the revenues and growth?
Yeah, I mean, to be a social enterprise, again, there has to be enterprise there. There has to be a business. So a lot of charities sometimes feel a social enterprise is an income stream. It's not. It's a way of doing something. And first and foremost, there has to be an enterprise there. There has to be some sort of market there. And then to be a good social enterprise, you've got to be good at that market. So you've got to be good at delivering what you deliver. Because you'll have loads of competitors in the private sector, maybe even in the social sector, who are also trying to deliver that. So you've got to get very good at the business of what you're delivering. We're very good at buses. And we have to learn that, and we have to become very, very good at delivering that service. Because what a commissioner or anyone else should never have to exchange value for values. So they should be able to get as good a service, even within a values-driven organization, as they get elsewhere.
Right. That's a very interesting way of putting it. I'm just thinking on this journey. You mentioned, obviously, I suppose, getting everybody on the same page at the senior level in the organisation and working together to create this vision of what it was, you know, what this entity would be, and this mix of values. Are there one or two other kind of key moments, would you say, in the development of the organisation in HCT's history that were have been crucial moments, or watershed, or crossroads, or in the development?
I mean, I suppose the biggest moments of challenge have been when we've taken on, or when we've had a large growth in a very short period of time. So we've taken on a significant contract or contracts, and the organization has grown, 30, 40, 45, 50% in a year, 18 months. And making sure that actually, or holding the organization together to get the capacity in to deliver that level of organization. And that, a couple of times that could have gone either way, you have to get, you have to make sure that everything is delivered and delivered well. And that can put quite a strain on the organisation. There's been no crossroads in the basic delivery model, because we've held firm with that. I mean, we're an asset-locked social enterprise. We put a charity on top. We're obviously very values-driven, and that's where we sit. So that's always been very clear. There's been a lot of debate on how we expand. I mean, because expansion is quite important to us. So how do we expand, geographically, and how do we expand within communities of need? But the biggest challenges are with any, and they're no different to a private sector business. I mean, the actual challenges are growth. So, can you get the finance right? Can you get the staff right? So, which is exactly the same within a fast-growing SME.
One area I'd be interested in getting your views, Di, is around scaling social enterprise. Not something that many social enterprises have done very successfully.
So the challenge, I think, for social enterprise is, what I said before, is to make sure that you can deliver on both a commercial and social mission. In a lot of ways, it's not that different to any other business. You've just got more bottom lines to cover all the time. One of the challenges is that people that actually run and work in social enterprises tend to want to do a lot of good all the time. So rather than build up a balance sheet, they'll actually want to spend the money, as we do, on delivering services. That's fine, and we all do it. But then when you come to grow an organization, you have less, you're less in the tank to grow it with. But I think the fundamental difference, one of the differences why social enterprises are not of scale, there's various things. The first one, I think, it takes time. So like any, you know, if you take out the internet companies or the, the very fast growing, the odd finance company and sort of, doorstep lending or something, but most good sustainable businesses grow over 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And I think what we need to be able to do in our sector is make sure that actually people leading the organizations and the boards of organizations look to grow it year on year to get to the same, sort of level as good, solid SMEs get over the same sort of life cycle. So it's not going to happen very quickly, or not ridiculously quickly, and in a lot of ways it shouldn't, but it should happen. But the other two key issues, I think, with our sector, if you're a director of a purely commercial company, you have a legal duty to maximise shareholder value. Very, very clear. So you have a duty to maximise the value, the money that you can get out of your organisation for shareholders. In our sector and under our usual governance rules, there's nothing that the board has or that any director has that maximises anything. It's all about minimising risk. So our board members, if you're a charity, it's very clear that you have to look after the assets of the charity in a prudent way, and there's nothing in that that says you have to maximise anything. So if we could sort of change some of the legal structure to say, actually, you have a responsibility to maximise the good you do, and not just do good. So to try to maximise the good for the beneficiary. That sort of change, and whether it's a legal change or a mindset change, I don't know, but it's that sort of change. How do you maximise something? And the second side, I think, is actually we're very, very poor in general on mergers and acquisitions in our sector. So everyone wants to run and own their own social enterprise. And if people thought, well, actually, the reason we're running this is to do a level of service, and if we ran it alongside someone else, or if we took someone else over, or they took us over, then collectively we could do a lot more. Again, it's a mindset change, and we need to be able to talk about mergers and acquisitions in the same way as the private sector do.
That's a very interesting point, and I think something I've certainly noticed, the proliferation of different kinds of organisations that are, doing good work, but many in the same area, possibly overlapping, possibly difficult to identify where one is specialising and fits in compared to others as well, but definitely interesting.
I mean, just on that theme, I think one of the things that we have is that if you look, we have an awful lot of younger people who want to work in HCT out of, straight out of management school or, MBA grads or whatever. But they're not all going to be CEOs.
Yeah.
The vast majority are going to be working, in an organisation. And it might be at, it might be a chief operation officer level. It might be chief finance. It might be head of, a service delivery or something. It might be in a marketing or business development role. But unless we have organisations of scale, then we're not creating career paths for people who want to work in the social enterprise sector. We're actually excluding a lot of people who'd love to work in the sector, have the skills to do it, but they're not necessarily the CEO.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I suppose as a role model organisation, in the lessons that for other social entrepreneurs, seeing HCT growing and how you do that must be inspiring in itself.
Well, hopefully, obviously we don't do it for that reason, but hopefully that if there's enough organisations like ourselves, then we can have clear paths for people within organisations, within the sector. So we can have people who join us on maybe management training course and then go on to work for another social enterprise and then end up as a CFO of another social enterprise. And that's the sort of ecosystem that we need to develop.
Absolutely, that's very interesting. Just one area that you mentioned earlier that I'd like to try and understand. This, you were mentioning balancing the social and the business. I suppose there are many different ways to do that. One might be to balance projects or contracts, to do one more commercial contract and one more social or something like that. So that and another way might be to try and blend them in every contract, as it were. I mean, I'm simplifying here, I suppose, but to what extent, how do you approach that? I mean, trying to be, if you were able to give me an example or look a bit more systematically at something like that.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because what we sort of, when we're looking at contracts, what we try to look at is what's the impact that we can make. So not what is the impact of the contract, but what's the different impact that ATT could make if we do that contract. And it might be that it's a contract that we think is lucrative, that we can make some money out of, and then we can reinvest that money into a social part of the organization. It might be a contract that actually we can think we can do in a different way, which has a positive social impact for the people using that service, or it might have a positive social impact for people who are commissioning that service. So there's various ways that we look at it, and all our managers are tasked with, you know, sort of on a day-to-day basis, what is the additionality of impact that they are making in their unit, and then our overall sort of business development team, it's actually what is it per contract? Is it a contract that is basically designed just to try to make us some money, or is it one actually that has a lot more layers of impact within the contract that by us doing it, we can deliver, whereas other people might not be able to deliver that impact?
Well, it's very interesting, and obviously at the heart of what's an evolving area, in a sense, you're probably having to do this, you know, in a unique way for your organisation, because these kind of ideas and processes are perhaps less well established than, you know, some of the more straightforward, you know, profit-making business operations.
Yes, I mean, a lot of the things we've been involved with over the last 5 or 10 years are very, I suppose they're in their infancy. And so, you know, the whole idea of social finance, the whole idea of impact measurement within organizations, and then, you know, taking it even to the further level, the actual reason the organization exists on impact, all those things are quite new. And in some ways, we're feeling our way like others are, which is quite exciting in a lot of ways. And it'd be interesting to see how that all shakes down over the years, but all those areas are very important to a, you know, to a social enterprise like us.
Excellent. So I mentioned that your success is obviously inspiring other social entrepreneurs. Who has inspired you personally?
Yeah, I saw that one. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. We haven't, I suppose. There wasn't a lot that, you know, in the social enterprise sort of sphere that have gone before us in that way. And because we didn't start out to follow a business model, we just started out with our own business model, which sort of evolved. We weren't actually following a player that's, you know, there's great organizations out there, don't get me wrong. But, you know, when we were sort of building it, or there wasn't really anyone specific that we were trying to emulate. It was just, well, you know, this is what we need to do to get this business to the next stage.
Absolutely.
If I can't really help you on that one.
No, don't worry. It's interesting to you know, because as I say, it's been an unfolding story for you, hasn't it? It's you've been spontaneously, I suppose, responding to the developments of the organisation rather than, you know, coming in with a fixed idea, as it were, of what you want to do.
Yeah, and also I suppose the because the you know, the social enterprise as a sector is very new anyhow, and so, you know, there wasn't a lot, you know, a lot of the things we've tried have been tried for the first time sort of thing, so that, you know, there wasn't a lot out there that, you know, that you could say, ah, yeah, you know, we'll follow that model. So more than likely we've made sort of more mistakes than most have made, but that's part of it.
Yes. Did you think that's important? Because, you know, people talk a lot about learning from failure and there's different kinds of failure, but I suppose in an area which is evolving and there are new paths required, if people aren't willing to take certain kinds of measured risks, I suppose, or at least to think about way doing things differently, then the challenge coming up with new ideas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sort of any business will have levels of failure even if the business doesn't fail. So, you know, if everything you try always succeeds, then you're obviously not trying hard enough. Because, you know, there will always be things that you try that don't work, which is fine. I mean, I suppose that's making sure that everyone's comfortable with that, you know, with that level of measured risk. I mean, entrepreneurs are not risk takers. I mean, that's always been a bit of a myth. What, you know, what they tend to do is understand risk. And that's rather, you know, they're not gamblers as such. And that's, that's always been a bit of a misconception, I think.
Yes, it's interesting. It's interesting the term social entrepreneur, because another term which I guess you see around being used is change makers or something like that. And I know the Ashoka, they talk about that. I don't know, because I suppose being a social entrepreneur also puts the focus on being that's maybe the CEO, the entrepreneur, rather than, you know, a person who's part of an organization that wants to make a difference, I suppose. I don't know whether the language you've thought about that.
I mean, we don't usually use the word social entrepreneur very much at all, but we do use the word a social enterprise. Because at a certain scale, it's, you know, it is the enterprise and not the entrepreneur. So, you know, we're, the organization that we have that's been built, or HCD's been built, is being designed to be built for the next generation and the generation after that. And then it will be run as a, you know, as a social enterprise. More than likely, it will not be run by as entrepreneurially as most mature organisations aren't. Most mature organisations in the SME sector move from the entrepreneurial phase into the sort of into the structured management phase. I imagine the same will happen with HCT.
Absolutely, yes. And in terms of advice for aspiring social entrepreneurs, people wanting to follow in your footsteps and doing the, you know, creating organizations that are capable of delivering, they're sustainable and capable of delivering social change, are there a few pieces of advice you might give them?
I think the biggest piece of advice is the hard yards. You've got to do the hard yards, as a rugby terminology, but you know, you have to do the sort of, you know, the boring day to day of running a business. So it's not all, you know, it's not glory in the early years. It's actually just, you know, it's hard slog. And as in any business, it's hard slog. And it's doing the hard yards, and being very comfortable with doing the hard yards. And then if you get those right, then in come the backs and everything works fine. But, it's making sure that, you know, you're comfortable in just grinding out the hard yards.
Excellent. And nearly there. In terms of having a support for, I mean, as you said, when you set out, social entrepreneurship didn't exist as an area, and you're doing very novel things. How did you approach getting support? Did you have some mentors? Were you a member of different organisations? Are there things like that that you think are helpful?
No, didn't have any mentors, because the people that I looked at were too far off the spectrum, I think, from what we were trying to deliver. I think it's changed now. I think there's a lot more people understand what social enterprise is. So I think that that it wouldn't be the case now. What you seek out is people with ideas. And you always, you know, you always spend your time, and I still spend my time now, trying to find people with ideas, and it might be on different ways of delivering, it might be on social finance, it might be on governance or structures, and just trying to find, and, you know, pick the brains of people who know a lot more about that specific area than you know. I think the ecosystem for social entrepreneurs is getting much better, and I think that's all for the good. I think there needs to be, you know, a lot more free and frank exchange of views, but, you know, in a supportive way. There can be sometimes a level of criticism for criticism's sake. So there's quite a few people, which you get with any emerging sector, I think. So there's an awful lot of people who will talk about it, write about it, and support it, but there's not always enough people doing it. And it's the people that are doing the hard yards that are the ones that are going to make the difference. And what they need around them is an ecosystem to enable them to carry on doing that.
Yeah, excellent. And what's your next stage of growth, your aspirations for HCT?
We're going to do more of the same. So we've never sort of, in some ways, been very deviated from that. So we want to carry on growing the organisation. I mean, you know, historically we've been growing at around 20-25% a year. That will more than likely slow slightly to around the 15-20% a year, but, you know, we want to carry on growing the organisation at a pretty significant rate. We want to deliver on our social impact objectives, and the financial objectives to make that work. So, you know, what we want to do is build HCT just to be bigger and better.
Excellent, excellent. And this is the final question. And it's interesting because you mentioned the kind of growth that you've achieved. And you know, clearly at the beginning, from low levels of relatively low levels, it's easy enough, to get percentage growth rates that are more impressive, shall we say. But as you've continued to grow, you have continued to deliver very impressive growth rates. How do you do that? That's just a little simple question there, Di, at the end. I've just thrown in.
That's another 2 hours. I suppose, fundamentally, growth is, everyone understands in the business, it's about growing the business. And I'm not saying the social enterprises can't be good if they're small. Of course they can be. But our mission is to actually, what is it like at scale? What is it like when you're competing with the very big commercial players at scale? So we have the thing of growth, and it's a mantra we have that how do you grow your department? How do you grow your operation? And at senior level, what's the next area that we can grow? The exciting thing is that we have so much opportunity. So for a business, we have a pipeline which is it's like a funnel. We can choose which work we pitch for and which we don't, and we put ourselves in that position. So as you say, when you're in your early stage, it's easier to get higher percentage growth because you only have to win a small amount of work to do it. When you're larger, it's much harder. But what's happened as we've grown is our pipeline has increased at the same sort of rate as we've grown.
Right, right. And is it a cultural thing in the organisation? Is there some message that, in order to continue to offer the services and to be sustainable and to deliver the quality work, that we need to have, a foundation and strong, economic, strong business foundation, and therefore we need to continue to grow?
Yeah, and part of it is because, if we can do X amount of social good at this size, if we're 10 times this size, can we do 10 times the amount of good? And if you can, then obviously the logic is to grow it, because the more good you do, the better.
Thank you, Di, for speaking to me today on Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs. It's been a fascinating insight into HCT and your approach to building and growing a successful social business.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.